You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast, and today's episode is about circadian rhythm, lighting, and how this is perhaps more important than the food we eat, the air we breathe, and the water we drink. Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change. Creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started. Today on the Health After 30 podcast, I had the pleasure of sitting down and talking with Dr. Martin Moore-Ead, a former professor at Harvard Medical School and one of the world's leading experts in the effects of light on our health. With over 40 years of research on circadian clocks and the regulation by light, Dr. Martin Moore-Ead has had groundbreaking discoveries and has transformed our understanding of how light impacts our health. And this goes beyond just our sleep, our quality of sleep, and how we're feeling. But it transforms our overall health, how productive we are, how our hormones work, and how we feel in the day-to-day. In his new book, The Light Doctor, he is out there to help people boost their health, improve their sleep, and live longer. And that's what we're going into today. Not only the fascinating world of the circadian rhythms, but how we can optimize our lives to harness the power of light. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get in today's episode with Mark. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. Today, I'm joined with Dr. Martin Ead, and we are talking about the circadian rhythm. So this is a very large topic that I really wanted to bring onto the show, because time and time again, what I see is our life and the way that we're kind of going, our modern lifestyle is changing, and the way that humans are evolving are not, it's not changing so much. And when I think about this, when I take a step back and I look at all of this, circadian rhythm has such a large part in this differences. So let's go into circadian rhythm. Martin, thank you so much for being here. And let's kick it off by, what sparked your interest in the circadian rhythm and all the research that you do?
Well, actually, it dates way back. The first time I became interested, I was doing a project and I was trying to look at what was controlling the rate of calcium excretion that was coming out. And I started really going to extraordinary lengths to eliminate all the variables, you know, doing a, you know, trying to be a good scientist, you know, so, you know, make sure that the exact food that people were eating was exactly the same every hour of the day, make sure the all the levels of activity were the same and everything else, so that I wanted to rule out effects that were related to sleep or related to light and dark and everything else. And the more I got the variables ruled out, the stronger this natural pattern occurred, this big spike in calcium that came out during the daytime and didn't come out during the night. And it turns out to be a hugely important adaptation to our lifestyle, because when you're lying down in bed, you would leak calcium out of your bones because you're no longer stressing the bones. But at night, when you sleep, you don't lose calcium. And this is, you know, what happens in astronauts in space is they lose calcium out of the bones. The bones become more brittle and so forth. So really, that sort of got me started. And then from there, I got into aware of the practical applications of circadian rhythms when I'd graduated out of medical school, came across to Canada, actually, to do my rotating surgical internship. And I found myself working a junior resident in surgery, working those 36-hour-long continuous shifts on my feet, off for 12 hours, back in for 36, off for 12 hours again, 100-odd hours a week on the job. And, you know, the number one, impaired by fatigue, nodding off in the operating room, all the issues, writing prescriptions I couldn't make sense of. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of that were these patterns of alertness. Even if one'd been up for many hours, there were a certain time, been up for 24 hours, suddenly you became alert again at certain times. And that really got me interested in the practical applications of circadian rhythms. And that's when I took a detour out of surgery after my first year residency to do a PhD in what was a brand new field at that time of circadian rhythms, a PhD at Harvard Medical School. So that's how I got started in the whole thing. Really just, I couldn't beat it, so I better join it. In other words, my research, right? And secondly, it was there, even in the most extreme circumstances, it was such a dominant force that I really got interested in looking into it further.
Yeah, just being aware of these patterns that keep coming up time and time again in your own cycle of the day. You have so much research articles and so much literature out there. And I was on your website, and one of the first things that you see when you go there, and I want to ask if this has kind of concluded what your research has found. There's a quote that you have, and it's, "The light we see is as important to our health as the air we breathe, the food we eat, and the water we drink." I would love to know how you came to this conclusion.
Absolutely. Well, we just mentioned, you know, the pattern circadian rhythms, and circadian rhythms are the variations in everything about our bodies across the time of day. Some things are peaking in the middle of the day, like our body temperature in the late afternoon hours. Other things are peaking in the middle of the night, like melatonin hormone peaking at about 2 a.m. Growth hormone peaks just after you go to sleep. Cortisol peaks just before you awake, and so on and so forth. And hundreds, if not millions, of functions of the body vary around the clock, including, of course, our sleep and wake, which are the most, you know, obvious ones. Mm-hmm. So those circadian rhythms are an adaptation to life on a rotating planet, where in the days before electricity, life was very simple in terms of our biology. We were mostly outside. Most people were outside much of the day in bright daylight, sunlight. And at night, without electricity, in the evenings, they might use candles and wood fires, but they contain very little blue. And we'll come back to why the blue part of it is very important. But essentially, they slept in the dark at night. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, what you get is very robust circadian rhythms. You have very strong patterns. Your health is at the best. You sleep at your best. And indeed, you know, one of the fascinating experiments done relatively recently by a professor at the University of Boulder, Colorado, is he took a group of people who were living their regular lifestyles, and he measured when they slept and how long they slept and their melatonin when it occurred and all the rest of it, and measured their rhythms. And then he took them out into the wilderness in the backwoods of Colorado, where they had no electric devices whatsoever, no phones, no flashlights, nothing at all. They slept in tents at night. They hiked during the day. They recreated the world of our ancestors. They could have wood fires at night because that's what our ancestors had for thousands of generations. And when they did that, all these people's sleep really expanded. They felt much better. Interestingly, the people who were naturally night owls and others who were naturally morning types, you know, the different variation of when people like to sleep and when they like to be at their best, merged together. So everyone adopted a similar pattern. So that's just one of the bits that we are missing in today's world, where we have come indoors more than 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. Where we are in dim light indoors, and the light is about 1,000 times less bright indoors than it is outside. Where during the evening hours, we have light that is 1,000 times brighter than it is outdoors. And we've actually lost the contrast, the natural contrast between day and night.
Yeah. It's blended. It's almost all blended with the indoor lights.
You know, as I say, you go back to ancient texts like the Bible. You know, and God separated the night from the day. It was separated, right? Now we've merged it all together, so that what we've done is we've lost the strong signals that not only keep our circadian clock, there's a clock, a master clock in the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, not only keep that in step, but also all the clocks in our body in step with each other, so that our circadian system is robust. And that is really an essential ingredient of health. So we now know all sorts of diseases and conditions that are occurring just because we've basically lost that fundamental connection with nature. In other words, the exposure to bright, rich sunlight and daylight, and we are polluting our environment at night, particularly with the modern LEDs, and we can get more into why the modern LEDs are such a problem.
Yes, the modern LEDs. I have an old DDR, like the German GDR, old light, you know, that I have in my, and it's been there for years, you know, and it's an old one with has this nice yellow glow. And I look at the new lights in my light, and you literally in the house, and you literally can see the difference in the type of light that they shoot out. There's a coldness to these LEDs. And I think for the eyes and just for the comfort, the yellow light is so much nicer. But let's go into the LEDs, because at some point in Australia, they outruled all the old light bulbs, and now everything is with LEDs.
That's right. And what is done, it's a movement in name of claims to be for energy efficiency. But actually, that's very false, because what they're doing is the engineers and the regulators, and they're largely engineers, who are setting these standards, are trying to reduce the amount of electricity used by electric light and everything else. You know, part of the climate challenge. How do we deal with this? Reduce the use of electricity. Well, the problem is what they have not recognized is there are visual parts of light. So what you see is one thing, but there are also very, very important non-visual effects of light. Light coming into your eyes is actually having a huge impact on your body and your health in all sorts of ways, and all the colors of the rainbow that are inside light. So white light is made of all the colors of the rainbow. Actually, white light is an optical illusion. We look at something and say that's white in our heads, in our occipital cortex, in our brains. But actually what's coming into our eyes is all the colors of the rainbow, from violet to blue to greens and yellows and oranges and reds and so forth. And each of those colors of the rainbow have very precise effects on our health. But indoors, when we produce these LEDs, they're designed to maximize what's called lumens per watt. Now, watt is obviously electricity. Lumens is actually a measure of the visual brightness of light. But visual brightness is actually just determined, or virtually or totally determined, by the yellow and orange part of the light spectrum. So blue content, red content, violet content, even infrared or ultraviolet, have no effect, or virtually no effect, on the lumens. So they're viewed as wasted energy. So now what we've done is create these artificial lights. They happen to be rich in blue. They've got a blue pump to them, because that's the most efficient way to convert energy. But then they are coated with phosphors to give us a lot of yellow and orange, so they get the maximum brightness. So essentially what these rules have given us is junk light.
It's so different
from the natural spectrum. It doesn't provide what we need during the day in terms of a full spectrum of the rainbow elements of light. It doesn't provide that during the day. And at night, it provides way too much blue, such that it actually disrupts our circadian clocks. And it increases, and this can directly demonstrated, increases our appetite, increases our obesity. It increases the number of snacks you eat, doubles, by the way, under LED lights, under these non-LEDs. It affects your diabetic. In fact, you can render a group of perfectly healthy people like you and me, and just put us in a room with LED lights at night, and we will fail a diabetes test in the morning, the glucose tolerance test. It also increases the risk of heart disease and increases the risk of certain key cancers. Most notably breast cancer in women, perimenopausal women, rate of breast cancer radically increased. And indeed, breast cancer and also prostate cancer in men and colorectal cancer, all cancers that are growing rapidly now as we start using these LED lights as the only internal light source. So now what we've done is we've created a whole lot of chronic disease, and we're shortening our lifespans. And you might say, well, how do you know that? Well, the huge study is now done, one in Sweden with 29,000 women, another done in the UK with 85,000 men and women, showing that people who are exposed to natural daylight during the day and tend to stay outdoors more live years longer than people who tend to stay indoors. And we show people who have light at night, and many people sleeping at night with the lights on in their bedrooms, die years sooner than those who sleep in the dark. So we've got ourselves into a huge medical crisis of that's been created by just the unwise use of light. That's the issue, and that's why light is as important. In fact, I'd argue even more important than the food you eat, the water you drink, and the air we breathe.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's exposed to us all the time. And as you said, these indoor lifestyles we have not only these artificial lights, but we've also got the screens, the phones, the TVs, whatever else we have. And we're talking about the blue light in these artificial LED lights. Can we also talk about the blue light? You know, we always hear about the blue light in the phones and the screens and how this affects us. Is there different types of blue light?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that is also very, very important. So we've talked about, let's talk a little bit more about the visible light. Visible light starts from the near ultraviolet and the so-called deep violet light, and then in progresses into blue, where, but blue is of many shades, and each of those shades has different effects. So violet light is actually very important, deep violet light. And by the way, the range goes from about 360 up to 780 nanometers. That's the how we actually, we can put a precise wavelength on each of these lights, and it's a way of precisely describing it. So deep violet light, which is like between 360 and 400, is essential for preventing myopia. That's why short-sightedness in kids is escalating in the world, because they are not exposed to that light, that deep violet light. They don't play outside, for example. And windows block that light, deep violet light. Our cars, windscreens do block it. And even our eyewear, when they give these kids eyewear to correct their myopia, their short-sightedness, that's also blocking this light that's so essential to the nutrient and health and blood vessels inside the retina, inside the eye. So that's deep violet light. But going into blue now, there are, you know, down in certain levels of violet and to the blue range, you've got light is a disinfectant. It will actually kill bacteria and viruses. As you move up into light that's in the royal blue range, that cures jaundice in newborn babies. As you move to about 480, which is sky blue, so we go from, you know, violet blue to royal blue to sky blue. Sky blue light is where the circadian clock is most sensitive. Why is that? The receptors in our eye, blue detectors, are sky blue detectors in our eyes. Interestingly, you talked about screens. They're largely on the bottom half of the retina, so they're actually mainly seeing the light from above. So we're much more sensitive to skylight, to ceiling light, than we are even to screens in terms of the effectiveness of that light. But essentially, these sky blue detectors in the eye containing a pigment called photopigment called melanopsin, those are sitting in what's called, technical term is intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells. What a mouthful.
Layman's term.
IPRGCs, use the acronym, have a pathway directly into the SCN, the master clock in the brain. That's the clock we, back at Harvard, we identified where it was in the human brain. This is the master clock. And then sending out signals through the pineal gland and melatonin through the cortisol axis to the, all the cells of the body and keeping the body in sync. So, you know, that's the sky blue. And then you move up into other colors of the spectrum. Green light is calms the amygdala down. You take a walk outside in a green forest, it calms you down, the emotional centers of your brain. And it relieves pain. In fact, migraine pain now can be relieved by using green light. When you get up into the reds, there are red lights that will heal scars and tissues, and others that will grow hair. So you can see that every part of what nature gives us on a walk outside is something that is healing various parts of our body. And the absence of those colors, you know, at night, in other words, in darkness at night, enables the body to go into a repair and recovery state where we also can suppress our cancer. That's why women, you know, who are out, who are exposed to these LED lights in the evening have much higher rates of breast cancer. The rates are sevenfold higher than people who've never seen electricity. You know, who's never seen electricity? People before electricity was invented, people in parts of the world like sub-Saharan Africa, who are not electrified, and blind women, right?
So you have the comparison here.
So it's sort of like we've created these diseases of our modern society by chasing the wrong metric, chasing this lumens per watt, and excluding. You mentioned back in Australia how they banned the incandescent lights and the halogen lights, the classic old Edison light bulbs. They banned in the U.S. too. They're now, you know, cranking up the lumens per watt standards to impossibly high levels that can only be achieved by these blue pump LEDs. So, yes, and there are solutions to all this because you can actually build lights that are healthy. And so that's the other side of the story.
Let's go into that because you're talking about the master clock, the circadian rhythm. I would love to know how the light can help. When we think about the circadian rhythm and the master clock, the amount of different hormones that are triggering, getting released, getting activated, getting deactivated when we wake and sleep, it sounds as if that our circadian rhythm is literally the master clock for our whole entire body's rhythm. So when this is disturbed, you're basically saying everything is disturbed.
Yes, and just to be quite clear, there is a master clock, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, in the brain. There are also clocks in virtually every tissue of the body. And so they can go off wandering off on their own time. And when they're wandering on their own time, you get the phenomenon we know as jet lag. You can create jet lag while you're sitting at home without the joy of travel just by screwing up the light regimen you're sitting in.
Mm-hmm. And this is, I mean, what you've really highlighted is the way in which we used to live, where we've come from, our ancestral upbringing, and how we've been in sync with the day and the night. It's completely been flipped upside down now. And we live in this modern world. And I think while a lot of people would like to be able to just switch off, go back, how can we meet what our needs are and the modern world?
Well, there's some actually fundamental things you can do. First of all, to keep our circadian clocks set precisely to day and night, the outside world, what you actually need exposure to, most importantly, is morning daylight. And so that basically, because that's the time of day that light falling at that time shifts our clocks back into that. They naturally drift a little longer than 24 hours. So that helps shift them back into sync again. It's like a wristwatch, which is, an old wristwatch, which tends to drift. And every so often you have to shift the time. Well, we have to do that. Now, what's fascinating is, why is the morning time? Well, the evidence is, you know, for example, here's a practical application. If you admit a group of, and this has been done several times, admit psychiatric patients who, and they're admitted because they've got deep depression, anxiety, PTSD, into psychiatric hospitals so they get the appropriate treatment and make a journey towards a recovery. If you admit them into a hospital where half the rooms on one side of the building are facing southeast, in other words, they're all getting the morning sun, and the other half of rooms are facing northwest, where they get no morning sun. They still get light, but there's no morning sun. The people who are in those south and east-facing rooms get discharged in half the time, cured of their psychiatric conditions. They got the same doctors, the same conditions, the same medications, the same therapy sessions. Everything else is the same. It's the fact they're exposed to morning light. So one first message here is get out every morning. It doesn't have to be at sunrise. In fact, in the summer, if you went out at sunrise, you'd start shifting yourself further and further eastward, as it were. You might get yourself a little out of sync. But certainly in the early to mid-morning, get out for half an hour or whatever. Get exposed to that daylight. That's one key.
This is so really wonderful because a lot of the time you hear, get morning light. For example, here in Germany right now, the light is not getting up until 8:30. You know, in the deepest, darkest winter, it's, you know, you always hear about this morning light. So I think when we talk about morning light, it's not by the clock, it's 7 o'clock, therefore it's morning, therefore you need to get the light. It's almost Whenever you wake up, that's your part of morning and to get out.
When the sun is climbing in the sky up to the peak, you don't, it's probably better not to go out practice in the middle of the day necessarily, because as I say, there's too much radiation and so forth there, risks of ultraviolet and the rest. But certainly in the, you know, in the morning hours, and you can do it in a reasonable time, and you can go out, you know, after breakfast or whenever, but you don't have to set the clock and wake at dawn. Mm. But you also, you know, we are also seasonal animals. We also, we talked about circadian rhythms. Those are rhythms that are around the 24 hours. We also have circa-annual rhythms in terms of our, you know, some animals are hibernators and the others have very dramatic patterns. But we humans used to be, you know, have a seasonal pattern too. So that's part of our biology. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can follow the natural lighting and getting out. So that's morning. So morning, that's one of the things there. Get plenty of daylight during the day as you can. You know, if you've got an office with a window, there tends to be the more senior people or the executives who get those offices in these big office buildings. They sleep longer and better than people who are in cubicles way at the back under very artificial LED lights. So that's one thing. When you get to the evening, really make sure you banish blue, because blue, remember, blue is the signal. You know, you might say, why is blue the signal? Why would it be, of all the colors of the rainbow, why would it be blue? Well, actually, that is quite an interesting story, if we have time, that basically, when life began deep in the oceans, way deep in the oceans, light, sunlight falling on the surface of the ocean is absorbed by the ocean. And in fact, all the colors of the rainbow are absorbed except for blue. So by the time you get down below about 100 meters depth, it's only blue down there. So basically blue was day and black was night. And that mechanism we can find in even single cell organisms. They have blue detectors. They have circadian clocks, which keep us in sync, our bodies in sync. And they also have they even produce melatonin, would you believe it, in a single cell. It's not just a human thing, melatonin. So basically, and melatonin, by the way, is not the sleep hormone. That's a mistake that often people talk about.
I hear that all the time.
In big doses, you can make people sleepy, but in normal doses, it doesn't. Mm. It actually is the darkness hormone. It's sending the signal to all the cells of the body, hey, it's dark outside now. You can shift into repair, restore, recovery mode, and also sleep. So it's a key signal. So that's the second part, is you want to avoid the blue in the evening hours, because you're really going to screw up that mechanism. Mm-hmm. That means you need lights that are blue free. Now, our ancestors had candles and they had wood fires, both of which have less than 1% blue content, very low blue content. Edison's light bulb mimicked candles because that's what he was replacing, and he had about 4% blue content. When we go to the modern LEDs, they have 10, 15, 20, 25% blue content. And actually, the higher lumens per watt they generate, and hence they get check marks by the regulators, allow them to have very much huge amounts of blue content. So we're blasting people with blue light in the evenings.
And so junk light.
Avoid blue light. Get lights that are zero blue. They could be red. They could be orange. They can be lights like we generated that balance out the colors using violet, so-called sora blue lights. Those zero blue lights, you can do those, but get rid of them. And in the nighttime, sleep in the dark. So there's the basic message. And my book, The Light Doctor, which I'd encourage everyone to look at, because it's written for anybody who cares about their health, to understand where to get lights and how they work and all the rest of it. It's available on Amazon and elsewhere. That's really explaining this really fundamental truth of how to deal with the light in your life, which is really a missing ingredient. People take for granted all the time.
Absolutely. And, you know, often we like to take a holistic approach. The whole basis of Health After 30 is for women to take a holistic approach to their health. And so often we concentrate on other aspects. No one's really thinking about light. And we start to hear it. You know, it's becoming more mainstream, blue light. I, for me, before I even made contact with you, the idea of it being the blue light in our LEDs, that was a new thing for me. So Absolutely. You also, I mean, in with your book and what you do, you also empower people to be educated, to make be able to make this change. And ultimately, if we are reducing blue light, if we are sleeping in the dark, we are going to have this restorative sleep. I would love to just touch on how our sleep can be affected by this, because from what I see time and time again, sleep is like the basis or like the all-encompassing thing that kind of brings our whole entire health together, the way that our quality of life, the amount of energy we have, our mental health, how much lust we have to even do exercise. If we're not sleeping well, then we basically, it's hard to get much done in the day. How to improve the best quality of sleep with our circadian rhythm and also through light.
Well, the most important thing to realize about sleep is it is determined by the circadian clock. In other words, that is help govern the time of sleep. But there's also a very major other factor, and that is there's a build-up of sleepiness the longer you're awake, right? So those two things are working in concert. So at the if you wake up after a good night's sleep, your circadian clock is waking you up. That's fine. That's great. And as the day progresses, and particularly it gets into the later hours, you will get sleepier and sleepier just based on this cumulative fatigue, as it were, the cumulative sleepiness. But the circadian clock then comes in and takes you over the brink to actually regulate the timing when you burn that off. If you stay up late, you work a night shift, you whatever, you will not sleeping, but you'll get sleepier and sleepier until about 5 o'clock in the morning. That's the toughest time working nights, right? Because you really are struggling. You've got the maximum sleep drive, as it were, from this what's called the homeostatic effect. And you are not letting your circadian clock put you to sleep, right? And then if you go too far and try to go to bed, you won't sleep well during the daytime. People get this in jet lag. They travel overnight and they finally can't sleep, right? You can't sleep during the daytime because your circadian clock's waking you up even, and it's overriding that sleep drive. So how does light fit into that? Well, number one, the blue light is critical for the synchronization of sleep. If you're in an environment with lots of blue light, it is shifting that circadian clock later and later and mm-hmm. putting you out of sync. So that's why even if you're working nights, what we do is have people in blue rich light during the day and zero blue light during the nighttime hours. So we keep the circadian clock, in position.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole discussion out there about does blue light, affect from our screens, affect our sleep? And there are a lot of people say, well, it doesn't really have much effect. And then there's another group of people say it does. So what's the difference? Well, if you just look at the first night, if you stayed up looking at your screens and you had blue rich light in your screens, it's not going to have a huge effect. It might delay by some minutes your sleep, but it's not a huge effect. If you kept on doing it night after night, then you start nudging the circadian clock. So the sort of studies that have shown very effectively are ones that have used, for example, we get another topic here, blue blocking glasses, okay? Now, there are blue blocking glasses that are useless, and their blue blocking glasses are very effective. It all matters the right blue you block. So mm-hmm. a lot of the glasses you go into the opticians and they sell you for another 200 euros, pair of eyewear that's got a light blue tint to it and for blue blocking, that's only blocking violet blue light. It's mm-hmm. not touching this sky blue light, which you need, which is so effective in the scanning clock. So you need glasses that actually block it. And most of those tend to look rather orangey in color.
Yes, I've seen them.
Right. They're the ones that would tend to be more effective just as a rough guide. But now, if I give people, and this is a big study just done by Harvard recently, if you give people, students in high school, and you give them blue blocking glasses for the evenings, so to prevent the effect of blue light in the evenings as they're doing their homework, and you give them a light box for the morning. That's another way. If you can't get outside, you use a light box that's rich in blue light in the morning. Then, in fact, those students will sleep better, perform better, and indeed it shows their math scores went way up.
Mm-hmm.
So people perform much better. It takes some time to do that, but that's one of the reasons that, basically helping particularly teenagers who tend to get out of sync. It's a time when their clocks drift later and later, and they can get themselves, so they can't get fall asleep until 2 or 3 a.m., and then they have to get up at 7 for school, chronically sleep deprived. So that's one of the things that has to be addressed. But that can be addressed, as I say, by getting rid of that blue light, getting rid of the blue in the evening, and making sure you either go outside or use a light box in the morning. Then you've got control of your circadian clock and your health and your sleep.
Absolutely. It's almost like rigging the light system to make our body work for us.
Right.
And this is going to have a rippling effect on our overall health.
Never used to have to do it, because it just naturally in the old world, you didn't have that problem. You went outside, you got daylight, you slept inside in the dark, you had wood fires in the evening. You didn't have a problem.
No.
Just as we've created that problem by being a little too cute in these LED lights we've developed.
We also need to get creative in a way that we can adapt to them and also live with them, because I don't think they're going anywhere. And perhaps with more research that yourself and your colleagues are doing, that this might try to make a change in how they're produced and the type of light.
Yeah, and that's the key. First of all, blue is not bad or good. It depends on when you see it. Right? You want to see it in the daytime and not at night. LEDs are not bad or good. It depends on how you design them. Because actually the beauty about the LED technology is you can design any spectrum you want. In other words, you can make it... So what we did is we developed lights that had zero blue in them, but we used violet in them, which we know doesn't trigger the circadian system.
Mm.
And you could use the violet to then make the color. It doesn't have to be orangey, reddish, ugly color. We can make it into regular or whitish, yellowish color lights by adding violet to the mix. And so basically you can craft, it's called spectrally engineering. And so that's the beauty. And you know, the issue is getting the regulators out of our way, because the regulators are trying to squeeze us to these blue-rich lights and squeeze out anything else that's healthy lights. And that's something that really badly needs to be reversed.
It does. And until the higher corporations start doing it, we need to start doing it at a grassroots level. And so thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, sharing what you know, sharing your research on the show today. The Light Doctor is your book. We can find it on Amazon. I'll also put a link down in the show notes as well to your website where people can find it as well. If there's one thing through your whole entire journey that you would kind of drive home, so when we stop listening now, that we can do, it's nighttime for me, I'm surrounded with artificial blue light, it's dark outside, what's one thing that we can kind of actively do to better our health through circadian rhythm?
Well, I think one thing, the answer is actually several, but, you know, we'd just say, you know, get out in the daytime, get outside. I suppose. It's going to lengthen your life and your health, right? So that's really key. Avoid the blue light like the plague in the evenings. But I think the one thing, which I haven't said, is try to keep a regular life. In other words, our circadian rhythms, we're designed to live a regular life. So basically, if you get into a regular pattern, you get healthier than if you're rather have huge variations or large variations in the time you sleep, the time you wake, the time you work. Getting into regular life is actually will lengthen it.
Thank you so much for being here, Martin.
Thank you, Alana.
Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.